Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. In the studio this afternoon is Dr. Charles Backels, a thoracic surgeon specializing in surgeries of the lungs, esophagus, and airway. He practices at Albany Medical Center, where he performed the first ever surgery in upstate New York to repair a collapsing airway using a mesh insert to relieve the chronic coughing and breathing problems that accompany the condition. Dr. Backels earned his medical degree from St. Joseph University in Beirut. He completed his internship in internal medicine at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation in Cleveland and completed his residency in cardiothoracic surgery at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Additionally, underwent surgical training at Yale New Haven Hospital and has a master's degree in cardiovascular pharmacology from the Université Claude Bernard in Lyon, France. Dr. Backels is certified by the American Board of Surgery and the American Board of Thoracic Surgery. He has written more than 25 scientific articles and chapters. He's presented his work at many national and international conferences. He's also fluent in English, French, and Arabic. Dr. Backels, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Chertoff.
Well, it's wonderful. You should call me Alan. I mean, I'll call you doctor, but you should call me Alan. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Well, tell me about this. There's a condition, we see it in the middle of the night on the television. An elephant is sitting on somebody's chest, and they call it COPD. What is that?
Right, so COPD is usually due to chronic smoking, which leads to a weakness in the lung tissue. And that would eventually lead to destruction of the lung tissue. So the lung would not do its job of carrying or bringing oxygen to the bloodstream. So that would lead to shortness of breath. And smoking itself can also lead to weakening of the airway wall, which would favor collapse of the airway. So you end up having a vicious circle of chronic coughing, which can further deteriorate your condition and the weakness of the airway, and further shortness of breath, recurrent infections, and so forth.
We had a guy who was a famous man here. He did all our classical music at WAMC for years. His name was Robert J. Lerdsimer, and he died of idiopathic lung disease. Idiopathic means we don't know, right?
Correct. Correct. Unfortunately, this is a big spectrum of diseases where most of the time we don't know why it occurs from the get-go. So there's a condition that would affect the actual lung tissue, even if the patient never smoked or was never exposed to any pollutant or environmental factors. Just out of the blue, they become short of breath. It's actually, even though it's a benign disease in the terms of not being cancer,
it can kill you.
It can kill you for sure, yeah. And I've seen young patients, you know, fathers of 40 years of age who just all of a sudden over a few months crumble down just from that disease alone.
Yeah, that's awful. Okay, let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Welcome back, Jim. What's up? What do you got?
Maybe I better change my question because I found out what his specialty is.
Okay, change the question.
Dangerous is formidurol in asthma patients.
I don't know that we got it. The connection isn't very good. So you said, what about, is it Materol? Is
that your question? Materol.
Albuterol?
Albuterol, okay.
No, pure Materol.
So I would probably defer that to a medical lung doctor. I typically don't take care of patients with asthma. I don't prescribe medication for them.
Well, Jim, try again the next time. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now, you do operations, and a lot of us have something called, diseases of the esophagus, which are brought on by reflux esophagitis, in other words, coming up. What do you do to solve that? Because so many people have it. It's otherwise known as heartburn.
Right. So the heartburn or the reflux is a very common problem that we do see not only in patients who are a bit heavier weight from a weight perspective, we also see it in patients who are not really obese. And the chronic reflux over time will change the nature or the lining of the food pipe itself, leading to changes over years and decades.
The food pipe being the esophagus.
Correct. Food pipe is the esophagus, right. Eventually leading to cancer. Now, still a minority of patients would end up with a cancer, but the heartburn itself is basically quite impairing to patients. So you see them, they take what we call proton pump inhibitors.
Yeah. Nexium.
Correct. Without saying potentially commercial names. Basically, those medications, what they would do, they would reduce the acid nature of our stomach secretions.
But for a while, we were hearing things that got a little scary, mm-hmm. because in the beginning, and believe me, I've been around since mm-hmm. the beginning, mm-hmm. When you took them, they told you, you know, a couple of months. But nobody takes it for a couple of months. You're on it forever.
Correct. You're on it forever until you either decide, I don't want to have this anymore, or until you
that
have...
That lasts for a day when you tell, I don't want to have this anymore.
That's right, yeah.
you run screaming from the room.
Correct. Yeah. Or if you have complications from reflux, which, again, we talked about cancer, which is still relatively rare. Before getting there, you can end up having a stricture from scarring of the food pipe itself.
Sure.
So that's one of the complications of reflux.
But you do surgery, right?
Correct. And so the other option is to do surgery because reflux most of the time is due to a weakness or some laxity in the lower food pipe sphincter.
And what do we call that?
LES in medical term, lower esophageal sphincter. Even though some question whether it's a true sphincter or not, but it does act as such. So if you have some of your stomach up in your chest, you're
going to... Called a hiatal hernia.
Correct. Right? You'll end up losing that sphincter role. So patients who have those two conditions, they would benefit much more from surgery by reducing their hernia and performing a wrap to reconstitute some of that sphincter function to the lower food pipe. Correct.
Interesting. Now, there are those of us who don't love the idea of surgery in that area. So they're just consigned to those medications, which I'm not allowed mm-hmm. to talk about. Mm-hmm. You said.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. No, no. You mean it that way. I was just. No, 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 I didn't want to say anything myself.
No. Okay. Well, it's interesting. Are they all are all those proton pump inhibitors mm-hmm. the same? I know that my New York State insurance from mm-hmm. my college teaching days prohibits buying that stuff. They won't let you. That's not on their good list. Mm-hmm. So they give you something else to take, which I've never thought is as good as the first one. Maybe psychological. But are there differences in the proton pump inhibitors?
I would say I'm not an expert to talk about the different ones, but I agree with you now with the cost control attempts from all government and insurance companies, there's a tendency to go to generic forms of medications, which you're right, they may not have been tested in trials. But chemically speaking, they're the same structure the true commercial drug that's quite more expensive.
Yeah, I don't believe it. Anyway, let's go to Daryl. Daryl, you're on.
Hi.
Hey, Daryl, you're on.
Hi there. The doctor partially answered my question already, but I was wondering, I was diagnosed with passive acid reflux and a case of esophagitis that put me in the hospital. And it was also somehow made its way into the trachea and damaged my vocal folds briefly. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, how does that happen? How can a liquid come from the stomach to the esophagus, I assume to the mouth, and then back down into the trachea?
Correct. You bring a great question, actually, which will link both the airway malacia problem and the reflux problem. So if there is weakness of the lower sphincter, we talked about it, if there's a hiatal uh-huh. hernia, liquid and even food can actually go all the way up to our mouth. These are severe forms. We tend to see them with bigger hernias as opposed to small hernias, but we do see them, and some patients would even aspirate. So an aspiration is a very bad event, where food and food particles would go into your lungs and cause severe pneumonias. There is also a theory that the reflux, the liquid, the acid reflux itself, even if it doesn't get to your lung, it can affect your vocal box and your air pipe and cause inflammation and irritation and potential weakness. So when I have a patient referred to me for airway malacia or airway weakness, first thing I ask them if they have heartburn and how bad it is and how well controlled it is, because it can contribute to that other spectrum of disease, if I may say.
It's so interesting because I'm a political scientist, mm-hmm. Or as my past mother-in-law used to say, a phooey doctor. Mm-hmm. But I do know that if you eat too late at night, you're in real trouble. At least I find that. If you don't eat after 5 o'clock at night, or if you eat my regular diet of a small can of unsalted peas, then you're in great shape.
Correct. It just goes with common sense. When we eat and drink, the food pipe is basically, it's a hollow tube. Gravity helps quite a bit with getting the food down and staying down,
right?
If you eat and run, you're going to have more reflux because there's jumping and humping, right? And if you eat and go flat and sleep, you're going to have tendency to have more reflux.
Yes,
so,
as in the old days, they used to make you sleep with your bed raised and your feet down. That lasted for about 2 weeks with me, and I just gave it up. Hey, Daryl, thank you for the wonderful call. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine, offering treatment for people with chronic back, neck, and headache pain at the Ellis Neuroscience Center, ellismedicine.org. Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional services and supplies to owners and contractors, curtislumber.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires. Culture College Cows, DestinationWilliamstown.org. And from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home, supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy. InterimHealthcare.com.
We are back with Dr. Bacos, and it's been a wonderful program, and it's stuff that everybody needs to know. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. There are days I really wish I had some stock in the Tums Company.
Right.
So if you wake up with heartburn in the middle of the night, what's the best thing to do, do you think?
I think Tums or other antacids, meaning those medications which will coat the lining of the stomach and reduce the acidity, are a good short-term relief. Drinking water actually helps quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed taking Pepcid Complete. I know I'm not supposed mm-hmm. to use names here, but I find it helps a little bit because it's not only the tum, but it, mm-hmm. or whatever that substance is, but it has a little something else in it, much more benign than the other things that you were talking about, you know, earlier, the proton pump inhibitors.
Correct. It's kind of a cousin. It works on a different pathway with the same result, reducing the acid secretions of the stomach.
But it is amazing how many people have this thing, isn't it?
Correct. It's very common. I think with our lifestyle, working long hours and eating late. Mm-hmm. I'd say also drinking alcohol, wine.
Alcohol is not good for this.
Right, because it will tend to relax the smooth muscle, which is what the food pipe is made of, or the esophagus. And when we sleep at night, our muscles, just from an evolutionary standpoint, they tend to be relaxed, so everything is relaxed, right?
Yeah.
So you have a combination, eating late with some alcohol and going flat too quickly after eating.
When Roselle and I were in Spain when I was a young man, we were walking around and I was used to eating at 6 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Spanish, they eat at 11 o'clock at night, you know, 12 o'clock at night.
Mediterranean.
So they were making it. Okay, let's go to Elaine. Okay, Elaine, you're on. Go.
Hi. About 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with Barrett's esophagus,
mm-hmm. right.
And I understand that's a cell change.
Correct.
It progressed to dysplasia. I wasn't placed on medication. I had ablations done, two procedures with mm-hmm. the Halo 90.
Mm-hmm.
And my last endoscopy showed no more Barrett's. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's very possible. That's actually the goal and the benefit of the treatment. It's an endoscopic treatment, so it's done as an outpatient with the camera inside the food pipe or the esophagus, and the lining, the abnormal lining of the food pipe is zapped by the machine that you mentioned, the HALO, which is the radio frequency machine. The goal of it is to actually get rid of the Barrett's altogether. Now, I assume you still probably do have some reflux, and I'm sure your gastroenterologist is still going to continue to survey your esophagus for Barrett's that may come in the future, correct?
Yes, I will be going annually. And I'm also on omeprazole.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. and my only concern with that is the side effect, osteoporosis.
Correct.
I know my gastroenterologist says, well, there's a trade-off. You don't want cancer, so. But is that still considered a side effect? Because he said there is research that maybe that's not what it was considered in the beginning as a side effect to omeprazole.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Again, I'm not a medical gastroenterologist. Right. I do know that osteoporosis is among the side effects of the proton pump inhibitors.
Sure.
There may be more recent data that's showing it's not the case, so I can't really answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. It's a trade-off. Like, you know, other side effects could be diarrhea, right? There was even some talk about omeprazole or proton pump inhibitors causing some changes in the lining of the stomach in mice, for example, many, many years ago.
Right.
Turned out not to be the, you know, a big problem.
Then you find out it wasn't
correct.
So. But there are always these sort of myths, mm-hmm, as to what it is. Now, the osteoporosis, I know, has been around, you, mm-hmm, know, for a long time. Mm-hmm. But there was one thing that came out a long time ago that said that if, in fact, you were killing the acid in the stomach, mm-hmm, by taking these proton pump, mm-hmm, inhibitors, you might be inviting cancer of the stomach.
Correct.
And
correct.
Is that true?
It has not been proven what the medications would do. They might change the lining of the stomach, but I don't think there's a direct link between taking proton pump inhibitors or antacids over a long period and stomach cancer.
That, well, let's put it this way. If there was,
at least to my knowledge.
If there was, I'd be a dead man.
You know,
yeah, go ahead.
That kind of makes, mm-hmm, me think of another question that I've had in the past. Inhibiting the amount of acid in your stomach, how does that affect your digestion and possibly trying to diet or lose weight?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I would say there's other enzymes in our small bowel that can take over in terms of digesting our the food. But you're right. It has always been a concern.
So it makes it a little bit more difficult to lose weight.
Again, no? I can't really comment on that, you know, weight loss or weight gain.
You should go on my diet, Elaine, which is one small can of non-salted peas every night.
That's
should all go
peas
on that.
Yeah, they have to, no salt added peas. It's great. And if you're really, and that's one, I think that's one point on the Weight Watchers. If you're really hungry, you could have two cans. Thanks, Elaine.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Bye. Let's go to Nick in Albany. Nick in Albany, you're on.
Hello?
Hey, Nick, you're on.
Hi, Nick. Thank you for having me. I just had a question for Dr. Bacchus.
Sure.
I'm an individual. I'm 24 years old. I have a history of a congenital diaphragmatic hernia. I had a surgical repair at birth and a few throughout my life. The most recent was about a year and a half ago and was complicated by an esophageal perforation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about probably 6 months removed from healing from that. After, you know, a long string of hospitalizations. And I just had some questions about, I've had periodic residual left upper quadrant and chest pain that radiates to the shoulder. It's kind of pleuritic in nature. It's not super severe, but some things like pleural thickening or scarring have been suggested. I'm just calling to see, you know, what your opinion would be in terms of ways to handle that. Like, would something like physical therapy help that, or... or just your experience with people who've had congenital diaphragmatic hernias in general.
Okay, for those of us who are out in the cold, could you please, doctor, explain what the condition is?
Right, so we talked about hiatal hernia before.
Yeah, that we know.
Which is the stomach protruding through the normal hole where the food pipe comes, yeah, from the chest to the belly. Unfortunately, nothing is perfect. The diaphragm is the muscle that separates the chest cavity from the belly cavity.
Right. And now, one is lined and the other is not.
Correct.
So when the acid hits the unlined part, mm-hmm, that's when you get the heartburn.
Correct. But I think what Nick is alluding to, he has a different type of hernia, which he was born with. There was a defect in his diaphragm, and part of his bowel or stomach was up in the chest and required more than one surgery, correct?
Yes, correct.
So, I mean, at this point in time, it's really hard for me to have a grasp of what's causing your symptoms, whether it's scarring or potentially even residual infection in that area. I would ask you, is your swallowing fine? Do you have any trouble swallowing?
Yes, yeah. I've recently been worked up just to check and make sure there's no, recurring leak or anything. There's no evidence of a leak on swallow studies. There's no signs of infection. All my blood work is normal. I'm otherwise a very healthy individual.
I see. I mean, your symptoms may be due, and they may be due to the actual surgery. I don't know if you have chronic pain from the incisions. I don't know how your surgeries were done, whether with a camera or the old...
But clearly what we can't do here, what no doctor can ever really do here, is diagnose over the telephone.
Correct, yeah.
You can talk
I understand that. That's not quite what I was looking for. I guess just, if you had experience with such things or with pleural scarring in general, if that is indeed a correct diagnosis that I've heard, if you, have any experience with that or potential treatments for such a thing.
Yeah, I would say pleural scarring definitely occurs, typically after infections. You said that you had a esophageal perforation, so I assume you had an infection in your chest.
Correct.
Typically, though, it's not very painful. It doesn't hurt that much.
So, right, yeah.
I don't know if you had any recent imaging just to make sure there's nothing going on in the chest cavity. It may be a good idea, but again, I'm not saying that's the right answer or the only answer to your...
Well, Nick, thank you for calling. I appreciate it very
much. Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. All kinds of free phones here, gang. Let's go to Pat in Johnstown. Pat, you're on.
Hi, I'd like to ask about pneumonia by aspiration in older patients. And once the infection is cleared up, does this happen more often again and again? And will it ever go away, this difficulty?
So I would say, to keep things simple, aspiration pneumonia can happen in three different settings. Somebody who has a hiatal hernia and a lot of reflux, somebody who's drinking a lot of alcohol, so they end up vomiting and they vomit in the middle of the night into their lungs, or somebody who have trouble swallowing in the upper, in the pharynx part of our body, basically, which is right above the food pipe. So depending on what setting you or your loved one has had an experience with, it could be just a one-time thing. You know, if you had binge drinking, again, not you, but just in general.
No, this is the third one you spoke of.
So you probably, there's a good chance that if you don't choke when you eat, then the next thing in my mind would be that you may have a big hernia and a lot of reflux. I do want to stress on the fact that not everybody who has reflux will feel heartburn.
That's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So
people tell me, it can still do the damage even though you're not feeling it.
Correct, definitely, definitely. You can definitely have a lot of reflux without feeling the heartburn itself.
Interesting. That's very interesting, I thought.
So I don't know if you had any imaging studies done, but it may be worthwhile, or at least an upper endoscopy of your food pipe and stomach.
Yes. Thank you very much, Doctor. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you, Pat.
My pleasure.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you want to talk to the doctor, that's a great time to do it. And untypically, we have a few phones open. Let's go to Cynthia in Verbank. Okay, Cynthia, you're on.
Hi there. I'm a long-standing silent GERD sufferer, but I didn't know until I had a child at the age of 42. After I had the child, I had horrible GERD, and I actually thought it was a heart issue. Then I eventually got to taking 6 omeprazole a day and 2 rintinidines a day plus Tums or any other liquid antacids. And then I developed horrible pain in my lung and started to have a horrible cough that's now treated with Qvar and... Arbuterol inhalers, And then all of a sudden, my GERD disappeared, except once in a while if I cheat. Now I'm down to one omeprazole and one Rintinidine a day.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I don't cheat with beer or chocolates, I do great. If I do cheat, I have horrible pain in my lung. But I'd really love to get off the inhalers and get rid of this terrible cough.
I see.
But I also tried recommendations from a book called Dropping Acid, where I switched to a basic pH for my water.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that with other liquids so that I don't take in too much acid. I don't drink pineapple juice.
Okay, yeah, I love pineapple juice. What's the answer here, doctor?
I'm not sure if I have the best answer for you. Yeah. I would say briefly, you know, I think your pregnancy kind of triggered things in the sense that pregnant women tend to have hormones that would relax their muscle. So it can unmask reflux and heartburn.
Also, if the tummy is responsible for pushing up
correct.
A hiatal hernia.
Correct.
The pregnancy's got to be a
terrible
time.
All the pressure
time.
In the belly will, you know, basically promote reflux and everything backing up the wrong way. Sounds like now you're doing better, almost on your own with some lifestyle modifications. You mentioned the beer, the alcohol, the caffeine. We know that these substances do lower the tone of the muscle of the lower esophageal sphincter and therefore promote reflux. I can't really comment on the basic pH diet. Again, I'm not in a position of saying whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think it will hurt. I'm not sure it really works that way. I think whatever we eat, our stomach is basically will secrete acid, even if we eat non-acid food.
Mm.
It's just the way we digest. It's just the way the enzymes of the stomach would work the best. It will only work well in an acid environment. So
I found that dates make a big difference. If I eat some dried yet moist dates,
mm-hmm.
it really reduces the acid and keeps it down. I have had 3 endoscopies,
mm-hmm.
and I did have one bout of H. pylori
mm-hmm.
that I was on 21 days of antibiotics mm-hmm. for.
It sounds like you've got the correct treatment.
Cynthia, I am so sorry we can't give you more time, but since you started it, everybody wants to talk to the doctor.
Wonderful.
So,
okay.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, both of you. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Thank you.
Let's go to Tillman in Saratoga. Okay, Tillman, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I appreciate you taking my call. I just was calling. My wife, who is aged 40 and a never smoker, was diagnosed with stage 3A lung cancer this past February. And I'm wondering if you could speak as a thoracic surgeon a bit about instances of non-smokers getting lung cancer. I know the statistics are something like 20% of non-smokers or of the people with lung cancer are non-smokers. If you could speak a bit about your experience with that subset of lung cancer patients to help raise awareness in our area of non-smokers getting lung cancer.
Right. That's you bring a great point, actually. And I'm sorry about your wife. It's quite unfortunate. As you alluded to, it sounds like you've been looking up the internet or a lot of information on the subject. Unfortunately, we do encounter lung cancer in about 15 to 20% of the time in patients who have never smoked. And we don't know exactly what triggers that that disease in this patient population, whether it's secondhand smoking or other pollutants, or the patients being unaware of being exposed to other environmental factors, for example, radon or asbestos.
Mm.
You're right. I think we need to help the public be aware that lung cancer does not only affect people who smoke. It can affect their loved ones if they smoke in the same household. And I think we've made a lot of progress from a public standpoint, prohibiting smoking in public places. It's been shown actually over the decades that in patients who were exposed to secondhand smoking, they checked one of the byproducts of nicotine in the bloodstream, and that cotinine level had dropped over the years, and I think that's because of those policies. Now, is there a great solution? Unfortunately, there's no great solution. We currently do advocate lung cancer screening in smokers based on one major trial that was recently published about 4 years ago or so. To be fair and honest, it would not apply to patients like your wife, patients who have never smoked. It's, I hate to say it, it's in many ways bad luck, but it doesn't mean that we cannot treat stage 3A lung cancer.
Except that you told me earlier, and I think it's a very important point that we have to make, Doctor, and that is that you really want to pre-screen people for lung cancer.
Correct, because that study, we know from that study and from our own experience, the earlier the lung cancer is discovered, the more likely it's curable from a surgical standpoint, and the more likely the patient will survive the longest. Correct.
Right. Right. Well, and that's one of the things we've been trying to do, because we've encountered so many people like my wife who are in this boat, who are getting it very early in life, 30, 40 years old.
Right.
And unfortunately, they're very healthy people. And they, I mean, folks who are being told for a year that they've had asthma or maybe a pneumonia only to discover it's cancer. And so we've been trying to work to get the word out to people, even if you're young, even if you've never smoked, even if you've never been exposed to these secondary smokes or other things, that if you've got something, a cough or wheeze, and you're not sure what it is, don't rule out lung cancer.
Correct.
Because if you wait too long, it's too late.
Tillman, thank
many
you.
Many of these folks are getting it.
Thank you. A lot of people lined up behind you, and I thank you for your call. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 minutes from Albany, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Jaan Shen, NLH.org, for more information. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting an opening celebration for the exhibition William Joyce, Guardian of Childhood, September 27th, with a large screen live video talk with William Joyce, arkellmuseum.org. De Blas's Chamber Music Series presenting music from Manchester Quartet, Sunday, September 27th, 2 p.m. at the Hyde, Glens Falls, New York, deblasis-chamber-music.org. Washington County Tourism featuring the arts throughout Washington County, including theater, dance, galleries, museums, music, performing arts, and more, washingtonnycounty.com. And from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows, empireexhibits.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And Doctor, it is a testimonial to your clear thinking that so many people are on the phone. So we have five phones all lit up. So I guess I hope that everybody will put up with me just moving everything along now for this last third. And every once in a while I'll get a telephone call in which somebody will say mean things. You didn't give me enough time. But, you know, it's the way it goes. Okay, so let's go to Kelly. I think Kelly's number three. That looks like a three, doesn't it? Okay, Kelly, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about, sometimes when I'm eating bread or like raw carrots that I have chewed, when I swallow, it almost feels like it gets stuck as it's going down, and I'll have to drink water, and then it will feel better, and a lot of times it will result in hiccups. I was just wondering if there could be an explanation for that.
Yeah, I think, you may have trouble swallowing in the pharynx area that we talked about earlier. I think you would probably benefit from an evaluation by a speech therapist, because they'll give you food in different consistencies and see what gets stuck and what does not. There's not always a great, again, I'm not a speech therapist either, but there's not always a one etiology or one cause of these problems. We tend to see them in older patients who have had strokes because their muscles doesn't work as well. But I think you would benefit from a speech therapy evaluation.
But to Kelly's point, each of us have different anatomies, right? And in some cases, if I eat a piece of rice, sometimes it can get stuck there or some, and everybody else has a different story. So it has to do, I think, with the way my pharynx is structured. You know?
I mean, to a certain degree, that we have common features in our anatomy. Yeah. The basic function of our mouth is to chew food, so it would go down in a smoother fashion, right? Obviously, chewing well is one simple way of preventing problems. I'm sure you are chewing very well, ma'am, but there may be something else more than that. You're right. Bread should go down easy.
What I'm asking is, it actually feels like it's down in my chest where it hurts, not in my throat.
Do you cough when you when this happens? Do you cough?
No.
So it's unlikely in your airway, because I can tell you this for sure. Our airway does not like anything inside of it except for air. So any particulate matter, any reflux, you know, matter that we talked about earlier, any irritants would make you cough quite bad. Mm-hmm. So it may feel that way. You may have issues with swallowing and the pharynx again. But unless you're coughing, it's unlikely going down your windpipe.
Kelly, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go to Dina. Dina in Troy. Okay, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. About 2 years ago, I had gastric bypass, the sleeve surgery. And at that time, the doctor found that I had a hiatal hernia. He said he repaired it while he was in there. Mm-hmm. Now I have the acid reflux all the time. So I have to take one of the medications for it, and I take it every day, and they told me I'm just going to have to take it every day for the rest of my life.
Join the club.
Because it creates like a vacuum, I guess, when they do the sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, can a hiatal hernia return? Is that possible?
Yes, it is. It's possible. So the hernia occurs for a reason. Normally, we have an opening in the diaphragm we talked about earlier, where the food pipe goes into the belly and becomes stomach. In some patients, that hole is bigger than normal, so it would allow stomach or even other organs to herniate and protrude into the chest. If there's inherent weakness of the diaphragm, okay, to be very honest with you, no matter what we do, we cannot really repair that weakness. So we can make the hole smaller to try to prevent the hernia from coming back, but nothing is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is perfect. I hope and I assume you've lost weight after your bypass or your sleeve resection. So that actually is one of the predicament of reducing the risk of the hernia coming back.
Okay.
Now, regular hernias, you know, men have and those can come back.
Correct. Like groin hernias, you can fix them. They can come back.
Yeah. Hey, Dina, great question. Thank you, Dina. All right, let's go to Molly in Athens. Okay, Molly, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Really quickly, since I know there's a lot of other people.
Indeed.
Is it true that apple cider vinegar does actually help with acid reflux? This has been a running conversation in our family, and we all do it, but I'm wondering if this is a wives' tale or if there's actually some fact behind it. But apple cider vinegar in water has strangely can calm the stomach and help acid reflux.
Honestly, I don't know.
I really
don't know. I don't know where if it's
if you
a
don't
myth,
know, then I'm going to say that it's a wives' tale
or a husband's tale.
husband's tale.
I mean, let me ask you this. Do you feel better, truly, objectively, you feel better after taking it when you have heartburn?
Yeah, we do. This is why it's just kind of confusing, because it feels like it would be acidic and exactly the opposite of what you would
expect.
Take if you were having heartburn.
Yeah, you're right. It's the opposite of Tums, because Tums is more of an alkaline medication to help coat the stomach surface.
And while we're on that subject, for years before I took Tums, I used to take the other thing. What's that with the, which is made with aluminum?
Rolaids. Yeah.
And then, you know, everybody said, don't take aluminum, you know, you'll lose your mind. So I stopped doing that. Maybe that was an old husband's tail also. and I stopped doing that and used Tums, which has been highly satisfactory. Have we found anything else about aluminum?
To my knowledge, I don't think aluminum is great for patients who have chronic kidney disease. So I think this uh-huh. may be why it fell out of favor.
Yeah.
Because again, we tend to see reflux as we age. And that also we encounter some kidney disease, but I can't really comment further on that.
Well, Molly, thanks for raising this question with us. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to Craig in Valencia. Okay, Craig, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I used to suffer acid reflux constantly. I would just look at a bottle of hot sauce and get heart. One day, you know, unrelated, I was doing some research on how they make high fructose corn syrup. And I didn't like the way it sounded. It was artificial, everything about it was. And so I decided to stop eating and drinking anything and everything that had that in it for sweet. And about a month later, I realized I was never getting heartburn anymore. So I could grab that bottle of hot sauce and sprinkle it, you know, on my chicken or whatever. And I've been in heaven ever since because I love my hot, spicy food. So I was just wondering if the doctor was aware of any research that's been done or if he was interested in doing that and maybe putting out a study that if people will stop, you know, consuming that, can a lot of people relieve themselves of rather than just heartburn?
Okay, so let me just get the question straight. If they would stop consuming what?
High fructose corn syrup.
Oh, high fructose corn syrup.
So I'm sorry. Is it helping you or
no? It's helping him.
It's helping.
He stopped doing it, and mm-hmm. now he says it's helping him.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's in everything from bread to soda. You know?
I see. I honestly don't really know. I don't want to sound like I think dietary modifications are important from
sure.
a perspective of not eating late and avoiding what we know for sure causes weakness or lowering the tone of the sphincter of the food pipe, which is again chocolate, caffeine, alcohol,
what about
wine,
meat?
Beer.
What about meat? We were, you know, in Asheville, and we got treated to a lot of meals this weekend.
I mean, fat can also yeah. actually contribute to reflux, obviously. Meat itself, proteins, I don't think it's been shown to favor reflux.
Well, this was meat on a rib with, as Craig says, a lot of fat. And boy, I almost died from that stuff. Craig, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Dick in, I guess it's Longmeadow. Okay, Dick, you're on.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm just interested relative to lung cancer. If the cell that the pathologist isolates after you remove do a lung resection, if the cell would determine any after treatment, in other words, would there be, let's say there's a squamous cell, there's an adenocarcinoma, there's an Oates cell, Would the cell determine additional treatment, chemotherapy or radiation, on top of the lung resection?
Yeah, definitely. As you alluded to, lung cancer is different types. Without getting into details, I would say, obviously, the nature of the cell and what type of cancer would determine how aggressive and what treatment the patient would have. I would say more importantly, though, spread of the lung cancer to surrounding lymph nodes.
Right.
And lymph node that we harvest during surgery is the more important factor in determining the stage and therefore the survival and also the treatment.
Right. Would you also do, usually before the surgery, mediastinal lung sample or?
Correct. So just to explain to our listeners very briefly, obviously lung cancer is in the lung, it's in the chest cavity, and lymph nodes are spread out everywhere in our body. They fight infection and cancer. And they are along the main windpipe in an area behind the breastbone. We call it mediastinum. To answer your question briefly, I would say yes, we tend to sample the mediastinal lymph nodes often, especially if we see on a CT scan or other imaging modality that there are suspicious lymph nodes, because that would make the patient at a more advanced stage and they would benefit from chemotherapy and even radiation potentially, whether before or after surgery. So, yes, we tend to sample those lymph nodes. Actually, just to say one quick word from a scientific perspective, it's a requirement for us surgeons to sample as many lymph nodes as possible during surgeries because that's what determines the prognosis of the patient.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thanks, Dick. 1-800-348-2551. We could probably fit in another call, but so I'll read one that came in over the internet. Dr. and Alan, post-knee operation followed by a heart failure episode, I left the hospital on oxygen 24/7. Asthmatic since infancy, lungs weren't great to begin with. However, I was supposed to taper off the oxygen, and I couldn't. Turns out I failed the sniff test. My left diaphragm doesn't work, and no one knows why. Is there a fix for this? It has been 6 years. All physical efforts and sleeping still require oxygen.
The brief answer, there definitely is a fix for this, and it is surgical. I'm not sure if I missed it, but did the patient have heart surgery or not?
Yes, it says here. It says here. I left the hospital on oxygen. Oh, no. Knee operation followed by heart failure episode.
I see. We typically see the diaphragm paralysis after heart surgery because the nerve gets damaged or injured during the surgery itself. Some viral infection can cause that paralysis as well, but there's a fix for it. Basically, we can do this with a camera surgery. We basically plicate the diaphragm, the breathing muscle, so it's not bulging and high up in the chest cavity, so the patient's breathing would get better. And it's actually, it has pretty good results.
Yeah. Well, good. I take it, I want to give you one more opportunity to warn everybody about screening for the lung. What are the symptoms, very quickly, that one wants to see?
Right, so hopefully patients should not have any symptoms before they get a CT scan. So screening, by definition, is when somebody's feeling, was having no complaints.
Right.
Again, if we base it to the strict criteria of the major study that was done by the NIH a few years ago, I would say if you smoke or have smoked one pack a day for about 30 years, and if you're age 50 or 55 and above, then you are eligible for a screening CT scan for lung cancer. It's been shown, according to that study, that your chance of dying from lung cancer is reduced by 20%, which is quite, if you do the screening test with
early.
A CT scan early enough. Because again, we'll tend to see lung cancer at an earlier stage and offer a surgical cure.
Yeah. Okay. We are just about out of time, so I just want to make sure that we have everything. Anna, very quickly, Anna, we can take your call, but it's got to be one sentence. Go ahead.
Okay. It is very quick. It's an answer to the woman with the cider vinegar. I have a mild lactose intolerance. I can't eat anything with sugar and milk, like ice cream, but if I have some cheese or something and have a mild vinegar drink or a glass of wine or something like that, then it works. So I don't know whether that helps her, but anyway.
For years, Roselle and I have a little patio, and it has cracks coming up between the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, somebody told us to apply vinegar to the vegetation that comes up between the cracks, and sure enough, it all disappeared.
Oh.
I don't think that this has anything to do with your question, but it is. But it is.
It well, mine isn't a question. It's telling her that the vinegar might do her good.
Okay, that's great. Hey, Anna, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks.
We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. I'd also like to thank Dr. Charles Backos for joining us today. He was a star. Terrific. Support for Medical Monday comes from Healthy Endeavors Medicine, Guildeland, New York, offering personalized functional medicine evaluations and care, including EndoPat testing, non-invasive assessment of blood vessels and heart, 518-355-2060. Thanks again for joining us, everybody, on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz, also incomparable. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. On tomorrow's program, it's an open forum. We don't know what it'll be about, but it probably will be about the Pope. Stay tuned now for a news update.